Supreme Court of the State of South Dakota, the Honorable Chief Justice David Gilderson presiding, is now in session.
Please be seated. The first case for oral argument this morning is Steve Schultz and others appellants versus Lyle Sandrett and Heidi Bybee, appellees. For the appellants, we have Rebecca Mann, an attorney from Rapid City. And for the appellees, we have Mr. Jeffrey Hurd, an attorney also from Rapid City. As you may notice, we've got four justices sitting up here this morning. We are not immune from the flu bug, and it found Justice Wilbur. She will be listening to the entire argument, courtesy of the Internet, and then will be participating with us by phone. So you're speaking to five justices, even though you see four. With that, Ms. Mann, you may proceed, and you have 20 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, counsel. The issue in this case is whether majority shareholders and directors of a closely held corporation have a fiduciary duty to ensure that their compensation is in the best interest of the corporation. It's an appeal from the trial court's grant and denial of jury instructions, and the Schultzes respectfully request that this court reverse and remand for a new trial. The trial court, relying on Mueller versus Cedar Shore Resort, instructed the jury that the fiduciary duty concept cannot be used to rewrite an original deal and failed to instruct the jury on employment at will concepts. The trial court erred for three reasons. One, the language from the Mueller case is not a rule of law. It's merely an explanation as to why a gifted minority shareholder is entitled to a lower decency standard in a breach of fiduciary duty regarding majority shareholders. Two, the deal referred to in Mueller is the gifted minority shareholder's limited right of participation and employment in exchange for no investment in the corporation. It is not the majority shareholder's compensation arrangement. And three, the majority shareholder's compensation arrangement in this case contains no limit on any fiduciary duty, there's no duration, and Mr. Sandrett was an employee at will. This is a shareholder dispute between the majority and the minority shareholders of Cosmos of the Black Hills Incorporated. The Schultzes, as the appellants, represent the minority shareholders, and the Sandretts, as the appellees, represent the majority shareholders. Don Schultz conceived the idea, purchased the property, and in 1953, he built the first mystery house with his father. Mr. Sandrett was hired to manage the Cosmos, and by 1969, Mr. Sandrett was provided a compensation arrangement whereby he received a base salary for the summer months that was supplemented by a bonus which essentially consisted of all of the revenue before Memorial Day and after Labor Day. The compensation arrangement contained no duration. There was no guarantee that it would continue even if it became adverse to the corporation or if it became adverse to Mr. Sandrett for that matter. In 1973, Don Schultz gave Lyle Sandrett the controlling share in the corporation. Since that time, the Sandrett family has been the majority shareholders of the Cosmos. In 1997, Mr. Sandrett hired his daughter, Miss Bybee, to work at the Cosmos. Miss Bybee began taking on more and more management responsibilities, and Mr. Sandrett began slowing down. By 2000, Miss Bybee is holding herself out to the public and to the shareholders that she's the manager of the Cosmos. Mr. Sandrett always calculated his own compensation, his own bonus. He never provided the amount of his bonus, the calculation for the bonus, or the information that he needed to calculate his bonus, which would have been off-season ticket sales and souvenir sales, to any of the shareholders or the directors.
Well, didn't your clients have some obligation to ask for that information? Or the books of the corporation, I mean, as shareholders, they certainly had the right to look at the books.
They certainly did, Your Honor, but that doesn't excuse Mr. Sandrett's duty as a director and a majority shareholder to disclose that information to his fellow shareholders and directors.
Why does he have an affirmative duty? Why don't they have a duty to just go look?
Well, they may have a duty to go look, Your Honor, but Mr. Sandrett still has a duty. The traditional fiduciary duty standard characterized by due diligence and the utmost good faith and fair dealing requires Mr. Sandrett as a director of the corporation to provide this information to his fellow directors and shareholders. For 40 years, Mr. Scandra is the only one who knows how much he's actually being paid. The Schultzes have no idea how much he's paying himself, how much he's paying his daughter, or that the tourist season in the Black Hills had changed dramatically since this compensation arrangement was started in 1969. From 2008 through 2013, Mr. Scandrett paid himself over $80,000 a year on average for a seven-month seasonal business. During that same time frame, he's also paying his daughter over $68,000 a year to manage a seven-month seasonal business.
Well, wait a minute. You're making a jury argument. We're not a jury. Those are factual issues that the jury decided, didn't it?
Your Honor, I believe that the jury never got to decide whether or not the compensation arrangement was reasonable because the jury instruction took away.
But as I read essentially Instruction 27, South Dakota does not allow a shareholder to use the fiduciary duty concept to rewrite an original deal he or she made with the corporation. How does that apply? It isn't. I mean, you're saying that the fiduciary duty, he couldn't, you're saying that that was understood, that he couldn't rewrite his own compensation agreement?
Absolutely the opposite, Your Honor. We're saying that he had a duty to rewrite his own compensation agreement.
So then how did the jury instruction hurt you?
Because it told the jury there is no duty to rewrite his compensation agreement. It took away the legal question of whether there's a duty, a fiduciary duty to review his compensation arrangement. So the jury never got to answer the ultimate question of whether or not that duty had been breached.
Well, but Instructions 19 and 21 both told the jury that he could not receive an improper personal benefit. Isn't that exactly what you're arguing here?
Yes, Your Honor, but then...
So there's two instructions that told the jury that they could do this.
Correct. And then you look at instruction number 27, which is the Mueller instruction that basically says, except you can't use the fiduciary duty to look at Mr. Scandrett's compensation arrangement. So I think the instructions are inconsistent, and that instruction number 27 just took away the jury's... The only claim that was submitted to the jury was breach of fiduciary duty. So on the one hand, we have instructions 18 and 19 that say, here's this fiduciary duty. Majority shareholders and directors have a high degree of diligence, good faith, utmost fair dealing. They cannot do certain things. But on the other hand, you can't use that fiduciary duty.
All right. Well, let's go back to 27. It says a shareholder cannot use the fiduciary duty to rewrite it. How does that apply? What shareholder are we talking about?
In Mueller, it's talking about the gifted minority shareholder. It's not talking about the minority shareholder.
How would it apply in this case?
It does not apply, Your Honor, which is why the instruction was confusing and misleading. It's supposed to be referring to a gifted minority shareholder's deal, which is limited right of participation and employment in exchange for no investment. But the jury undoubtedly believed it applied to the majority shareholder's compensation.
How do we know that?
Because that's how it was argued to the jury. Throughout the entire trial, particularly in closing argument, the deal was argued as Mr. Scandrett's compensation arrangement. Whether you call it Mr. Scandrett's deal or the Schultz's deal, there's no doubt that the deal at trial argued to the jury is this compensation arrangement. That is not what Mueller said. Mueller says when a shareholder receives his shares by gift, he's entitled to a lesser standard for minority shareholder oppression, which is not the issue in front of this case today, but also for majority shareholder breach of fiduciary duty. They're not entitled to the traditional high degree of due diligence, utmost good faith and fair dealing fiduciary duty. It's a lower decency standard. A gifted shareholder is only entitled to decent conduct by the controlling shareholders. That's the holding of Mueller. Mueller does not say there's no fiduciary duty to review your compensation or that the fiduciary duty can be bargained away. Instead, it simply says, if you received your shares by gift, you only have this lower decency standard. So it was error to instruct the jury on that language from the Mueller case because, one, it was confusing and misleading as to whose duty it's talking about, which shareholder, but also it just did not apply to the facts of this case.
How do we know the jury was confused?
Based on the argument to the jury that the deal throughout the entire 2 or 3 day trial was always the compensation arrangement. So when the jury is instructed that they cannot use the fiduciary duty concept to rewrite the original deal.
Well, that isn't what it says, though. That isn't what 27 says. They can't use that.
It says, South Dakota does not allow a shareholder to use the fiduciary duty concept to rewrite the original deal he or she made with the corporation.
That would be your client.
Correct. The instruction was used by the Skanderets to instruct the jury that the Schultzes cannot use the fiduciary duty, the only claim they brought, to change Mr. Skanderet's compensation arrangement. And that was wrong because it was confusing over whose duty it's applying, which shareholder's duty, and also it just doesn't apply because that's not the holding of Mueller. That's just merely the explanation as to why a gifted minority shareholder does not have the heightened fiduciary duty standard. And the reason they don't is that's not their deal. Their deal is limited participation in employment in exchange for no investment in the corporation. It's not fair to allow that gifted shareholder to rewrite or change his deal by demanding participation in employment through the breach of fiduciary duty concept. It's important to note that in Mueller, the minority shareholders, there is no a contract or agreement that they're attempting to undo. They simply demanded participation and employment in a family-owned corporation. They could not use the heightened fiduciary duty standard in order to prove a breach by the majority shareholders. Instead, they were only entitled to decent conduct by the controlling shareholders. The Schultzes in this case were not attempting to use the fiduciary duty concept to undo their deal as gifted minority shareholders. They were not demanding participation. They were not demanding employment. They were simply arguing and saying that the Skanderets had a duty, a fiduciary duty as a majority shareholder and as a director, to look at this compensation arrangement to determine if it was no longer in the best interest of the corporation. Instruction number 27 was further confusing because it doesn't apply to a director's fiduciary duty. Mueller is specifically addressing a majority shareholder's fiduciary duty to the minority. It's not discussing a director's fiduciary duty to the corporation and the shareholders. There's no lessened or limited duty for that a director owes. So instructing the jury that the South Dakota law does not allow the fiduciary duty concept to rewrite their original deal is confusing because it shouldn't be applying to the director's fiduciary duty, and therefore the jury was instructed that no fiduciary duty applies to Mr. Skanderet's compensation arrangement. And at the very least, even if this court determines that instruction number 27 was a correct statement of law, it shouldn't have been applied to Don and Eloise Schultz. They were original investing shareholders in the corporation. They had transferred their shares to a trust, but that should not change their status as original investing shareholders. The same rationale that's used to hold the majority shareholders, that the majority shareholders owe a fiduciary duty to the minority, that same rationale absolutely applies with Don and Eloise because...
Was there an objection made by counsel at trial to that effect? And Eloise stood differently than the... other minority shareholders, since that's what you're telling us now.
Correct, Your Honor. I don't know if there was a specific objection to that, that Don and Eloise were investing shareholders. I know it was discussed.
Well, I mean, we're pretty specific. You have to protect your record at the time of settlement of instructions. Did they preserve it or didn't they?
I'm not sure, Your Honor. I can't recall if that objection was preserved or not.
All right. Instruction 21 talks about majority shareholders must act in good faith and fair dealing. Was there any accounting information that was presented showing that they weren't acting in, or was it just a fact question from your clients that the jury made a decision as to what was a breach of fiduciary duty?
It was a factual issue, Your Honor, that the jury determined there was no breach of the duty, but I don't think they were properly submitted the question because the instruction 27 basically said there is no duty. So when instructed there's no duty, certainly there can be no breach.
But doesn't 21 say there is a duty?
It does, Your Honor, but 27 takes it right away. And so it's confusing to the jury that they weren't instructed properly overall because they're told there is no fiduciary duty. Don't worry about that, even though over here with the 19, 20, and 21, there was a fiduciary duty. So it's confusing to the jury. What are they supposed to believe? How are they supposed to know which way to go when they're told don't apply the fiduciary duty to any original deal?
You know, help me with with the standard that the jury what was to use to determine whether the compensation agreement was improper. Was it just a reasonableness argument, or was there an instruction that defined what would be an improper agreement? How did the jury make that decision?
There was no instruction, Your Honor, that gave the standard to the jury whether or not there was a breach.
So then both sides just argued whether it was reasonable or not. Is that what it came down to?
It did, Your Honor. However, I'll let Mr. Hurd correct the record, but my impression from the trial court as the standards argument was a deal is a deal. You can't change it. We don't even need to prove to you that it's reasonable. And that's why instruction number 27 was so prejudicial to the Schultzes, because while we argued this was unreasonable, this compensation arrangement is not in the best interest of the corporation, their defense was, doesn't matter. A deal's a deal. The fiduciary duty cannot be used to rewrite this original deal. That's not the holding of Mueller. It's incorrect law. It's confusing, and it should not have been provided to the jury.
Can you follow up on that point with a few remarks about the proposed instructions 15 through 17 that were not given by the trial court?
Are those the employee at will instructions, Your Honor? Those instructions should have been given because this compensation arrangement has no duration. There's no term. There's no guarantee that Mr. Skandert would have this compensation arrangement even if it became adverse to the compensation to the corporation. There's nothing that says it can't be modified. In fact, it had been modified twice. Mr. Skandert's base salary had been increased, and the amount that he paid for expenses for the off-season also had increased. So increased. Modified once to Mr. Skandert's benefit and modified again another time for the corporation's benefit. Because there's no duration on this agreement, he's an employee at will. You look at SDCL 60-1-3 that says the term that the parties use for payment is an indication of the contractual duration. So Mr. Skandert's paid annually or seasonally, however you want to term it. So at the end of every year, his compensation arrangement could have been modified, and it should have been modified. Mueller tells us that employees and shareholders in close corporations are employees at will. There's absolutely nothing indicating that Mr. Skandert has some duration that goes for a certain amount of time. There's nothing that says it's lifetime or permanent, but even so, lifetime and permanent employment is terminable at will unless there is additional consideration given above and beyond the actual services rendered.
So in your view, he had a duty to disclose his salary and his compensation arrangement and then reduce or terminate it? Because in your view, it was not in the best interests of the corporation.
That's correct, Your Honor. And I think it's important to recognize that terminating Mr. Skandert's compensation arrangement doesn't mean firing Mr. Skandert. It just means revising the method that he is paid so that it's fair for him and the corporation.
Did you have any case authority in support of that proposition? Is there authority around the country that would support that proposition?
That Mr. Skandert is employee at will?
Well, yes, or that he had a duty to disclose the salary, that he had a duty to terminate his own contract and have it renegotiated in the best interest of the corporate entity?
Well, Mueller tells us that employee shareholders are employees at will, so I think that addresses that issue. But the fiduciary duty in and of itself, the duty that he owes to the corporation and to the shareholders, requires him to disclose the amount he's being paid. The very classic case of breach of fiduciary duty or shareholder oppression is the majority paying themselves excessive salaries or bonuses.
And was there any evidence that it was excessive salary?
I
mean, you put in evidence of what it was, but was there any evidence that that was excessive?
There was, Your Honor. We had an expert who came and testified and told the jury what would be an appropriate salary for a tourist business and a seasonal business in the area. And also important to let the jury and the court know, too, is that Lyle and his family are all shareholders. So any money that they don't take out as salary goes in and comes out as a dividend that's spread out amongst all the shareholders.
And the dividend, as I read the briefs, continued to increase, and I can't remember the exact number, something like 17% a year.
That's,
which isn't bad for a dividend.
Absolutely not, Your Honor. It's not. But there's nothing that says financial success relieves a majority shareholder of his fiduciary duty. There's a California case that I cited in my reply brief, Jarrah versus Supreme Meats. It's the exact same thing. The corporation had great success, but the minority shareholder was still allowed to bring a claim to say, yeah, but you put more in your pocket in the front end instead of having it come out on the back end for all the shareholders to enjoy. And that was a breach of the fiduciary duty that the majority owes to the minority.
What kind of a troubling, or are we going to create a troubling rule if we say that officers and corporations have some independent duty to look at their contracts, their employment contracts, and terminate them on their own if it's not in the best interest of the corporation? If they have a contract with a corporation, I would think this is just going to create huge problems trying to decide where the line is when you have a contract and you should now terminate it.
I don't know, Your Honor, that we're requesting a rule of law that a majority shareholder must look at and decide and terminate his own contracts in that situation. What we're saying here is that there was a duty to disclose that information so that the board of directors, which had he disclosed it at that time, would have been controlled by the Schultzes, and that all of the shareholders in this closely held corporation had that information and could have had input to resolve and modify the compensation that they feel was not in the best interest of the corporation.
Your time has expired. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Mr. Hurd, you have 20 minutes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Jeff Hurd, and I'm here on behalf of the Appalese, Heidi Bybee, and Lyle Scandrett. Let's begin with what's not at issue. We have no dispute with the fact that there's a fiduciary duty. My clients, as majority shareholders and directors and officers, owe a fiduciary duty both to the plaintiffs, the other shareholders, and to the company. Number two, what else is not at issue? There is no issue of harm to the Cosmos. Now, we've heard a lot about, well, you have to do what's in the best interests of the company. The company was thriving. Profits were regularly increasing. I think David Schultz said best in the trial transcript at page 183. Dave Schultz says this case is about how much we should get as dividends versus how much they should get paid as compensation. It is a zero-sum game. Does Lyle Scandrett have an obligation to cut his own pay, which was a program established by the Schultzes, given to him by the Schultzes.
All right. But Mr. Hurd, I don't know that I'd call it employment at will, but that contract can be terminated by the board of directors.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And but this employment at will isn't really an issue in this case, Justice Everson, and here's why. Number one, there's nothing in the record, there was no argument, there was no evidence about the power of the directors to terminate the agreement. The question was always, did they have a duty to do so? Or, at least
well,
I thought it was.
If it wasn't in the best interest of the corporation, they certainly had a duty to look at it, didn't they?
I agree. I don't think the majority shareholders are any different than minority shareholders in that regard. If you look at all of the oppression cases, Hayes, Mueller, what they all say is, let me back up this way. Are shareholders in closely held companies employees at will? They are not. And that's got nothing to do with the duration of their employment. Look at Citibank, Butterfield versus Citibank. Those were employees who had no duration of employment. But the court found because of the handbook, in the exclusive progressive discipline of the handbook, they are not employees at will. Similarly, my reading of Mueller's is obviously different than the appellant's reading of Mueller. Mueller did not say that shareholders in closely held companies are employees at will. Mueller said, because South Dakota is an employee at-will state, that affects the reasonableness of Paul and Mary Pat Mueller's expectation of lifetime employment with Cedar Shores Resort. Again, it doesn't say they're employees at will. Indeed, the court in Mueller went on to say, but it's a jury question as to whether it was oppressive or a breach of fiduciary duty to terminate them. Employees at will are terminable for any reason. Shareholders in closely held corporations are only terminable because it is necessary to protect the best interests of the corporation. But there is no evidence in the record that anything relating to the Scandrett compensation arrangement was not in the best interests of the Cosmos. Cosmos was doing well. It was meeting all of its obligations. The only issue, and the only thing that Schultz has testified to at trial, was the fact that they wanted more of the revenue for themselves, and the best way to do that was to do away with Lyle Scandrett's compensation arrangement.
Well, your counsel today has also brought out they were, in essence, kept in the dark. They didn't know what was going on financially. Apparently, they got a dividend check at the end of the year, and that was it.
Yeah. The evidence on that was undisputed. All of the Schultzes, Steve Schultz, Dave Schultz, Eloise Schultz, starting in the 1980s, wanted Don Schultz to ask Lyle, how are you calculating your income year to year? Don Schultz, these are all appellants, members of appellants' family, said, I will not ask. He did not want to upset the apple cart. Lyle Scandrett had no idea that there was any question about his compensation. The bylaws of the company, Exhibit 150, the bylaws set out what information he was to provide to the shareholders and other directors. And every year, he provided what the bylaws said he was to provide under Exhibit 150, the bylaws. And he thought that was fine. The only people who had any question about the sufficiency of his disclosures were the appellants. And the appellants universally testified that they did not ask, even though they wondered about it. That will not give rise to a violation of a duty to disclose. They were a majority of the board of directors from 1955 until 2008. The Schultzes were. Appellants were. They had access to all of the information. The accountant for the Cosmos, Dixie Wilson, testified. She testified that every time Schultz has asked for information, it was provided. When this whole dispute broke up and they asked for information, she sent banker's boxes of information to them. Never once was there a request for information made that was not granted. That's the undisputed evidence in this case. Their only position was, just because we're directors, that doesn't mean we have to ask for information. You have an obligation to come forward with it. And I don't have a problem with that as a general proposition of law. The problem in this case is the bylaws specifically said what information Scandrett was to provide, and it is undisputed that he both provided the information he was required to provide and that he did not know that there was any question on their part about whether or not they were missing information. Justice Everson, you had asked about instructions 19 to 21. First of all, I think 19 to 21 adequately instruct on breach of fiduciary duty. But more to the point, the only issue is Lyle's compensation agreement on this appeal. The jury ruled on Heidi, Kevin, all of the other issues relating to the propriety of compensation. The jury ruled on that. In terms of the disclosures, instruction number 22, plaintiffs proposed, instruction number 22 was given. There's not a single reference in there to a breach of fiduciary duty for failure to disclose information. On appeal, they have indicated that requested instruction 18 somehow goes to disclosure of information, but it doesn't say anything about disclosure of information, and that issue wasn't preserved. If you look at the settlement of the jury instructions, you'll find that there was no duty to disclose instruction proposed or preserved. The duty to disclose is off the table. All of the benefits and salary paid to the other shareholders is off the table. So the only issue is really Lyle's compensation agreement. Lyle's compensation agreement was reaffirmed by the Schultzes when they were the majority of the board of directors as recently as 2004. So it isn't simply an antiquated agreement that he held on to past its expiration date. Justice Zinter, you had asked about whether or not it wouldn't create a troubling rule, and I believe it would, create a troubling rule to say that officers and directors and majority shareholders have a fiduciary duty to review their own compensation and decide if it could be done cheaper. You wind up in a death spiral. Because there's always, whether it's $10 a year or $1,000 a year, you can always find someone to do it cheaper.
All right. Isn't there a difference, though, between just saying, okay, can it be done cheaper and can it be done? Someone has to, even if it's your own compensation agreement, if you're in control, you have to look at whether or not it's reasonable or not. Isn't that the test?
If you provide it to yourself, I agree. The reason majority shareholders owe a fiduciary duty to the corporation is because there is a risk. Corporations are majority rules. Majority of the shareholders elect the majority of the directors. Majority of directors manage the company. Whoever has the majority is at risk of overstepping to the minority. That's why we impose a fiduciary duty upon them. This compensation arrangement was provided and created by Schultzes.
And does that matter, though?
It does. And the reason
Wait a minute. You said before that, you know, this is, I'm not going to call it at will because I don't think it is at will, but it's a terminable agreement. And didn't they have an obligation as fiduciaries to terminate it if it wasn't in the best interest of the corporation?
I think that they had an obligation to terminate it if it was harmful to the corporation. And I think that's the difference. Let me use the analogy of minority shareholders. The rule for minority shareholders is this. If you look at Hayes versus Northern Hills General Hospital, the court said we have a written employment agreement here. It may be enforced according to its terms, provided that the reason for its enforcement and the manner of its enforcement doesn't oppress the minority shareholder. Look at Mueller. Mueller, no employment agreement, expressly no employment agreement. And the court said whether or not your expectation is reasonable is a function of the fact that we are an at-will state, but you are still entitled to your reasonable expectations. The corporation and the directors must be able to act in the best interests of the corporation for proper business purposes. So I suppose the question before the court is this. Is it a proper business purpose simply that the minority wants more money and dividends? I concede Lyle could not have created this employment agreement for himself and then simply claimed that he was not going to look at it. Because as a majority shareholder, he couldn't overreach his power that way. But when it was given to him, and more importantly in this case, he is the majority shareholder for the sole purpose of maintaining this agreement. The evidence was both by Don Schultz, Lyle Skandrick, the testimony was that when Don gave this compensation proposal to Lyle, Lyle said, okay, I will do that, but if I give up all of these other things that I'm working on and come to work for you, what's to prevent your sons from throwing me out in 20 years when you're gone?
But that compensation agreement expanded significantly over the years.
The compensation agreement didn't change at all, but the amount, its value. Yes, Justice Inter, its value increased because what it had the function of doing is really creating two businesses. The Cosmos, while operated by the Schultzes, had just been a summer business. In fact, their expert at trial just operates a summer business. So what, as part of the deal, they said, Lyle, if you'll take a pay cut for the summer, we'll let you run this as your own business in the off season, after Labor Day and before Memorial Day. That's the way it's been done ever since. The difference has been the amount of traffic that's picked up in what we call the off season. But by the same token, the deal had exactly the effect the Schultzes were hoping for. It dramatically increased the dividends that they were receiving, and it dramatically increased the revenues that the Cosmos was producing during the summer season. Everybody here got exactly what they asked for and what they wanted. This system worked exactly as it was designed to work up until 2008, when they had the dispute over whether or not to expand the gift shop. And at that time, the Schultzes sent a letter saying, either change your mind or we're going to begin a series of very painful shareholder actions. And true to their word, they have. The question is whether or not, I think the question really comes down to whether or not Instruction 27 was proper in this case. Now, Mueller, I don't want to get too hung up on this term, the deal, in Mueller. The language in Mueller comes from Hamilton on close corporations. Hamilton on close corporations actually puts the deal in quotation marks. It's better, I think, referred to as the relationship among the shareholders than it is a reference to any specific contract or agreement. And what Hamilton said is that the fiduciary duty in close corporations has the risk of posing great mischief, because the people who put these together can be subject to claims that are essentially post hoc demands on behavior that the original parties wouldn't have either contemplated or did contemplate and at one time rejected, which is what we have in this case. So in the language in Hamilton was actually a question of whether or not economists and law school professors believe there should be a fiduciary duty, an enhanced fiduciary duty for majority shareholders. When the court picked it up in Mueller, the court picked up the tone of it, and that was this. We're not prepared to, when the parties get together and they decide how this is going to run, we're not prepared to let one side come in later and use this omnibus fiduciary duty concept to redo these arrangements, because it's simply too disruptive to small businesses in South Dakota. It's simply too disruptive to the manner in which these operations run. Now, I do have to say, I'm not sure what to make when, Justice Inter, when you asked about the rule that would come out of this, and I believe counsel said, we're not asking for a rule of any duty to undo one's contract simply to disclose. Well, the disclosure issue, one, wasn't preserved. Two, they never proposed any instructions on disclosure. And three, they admitted that they never asked for the information even while they were a member of the board of directors. I don't think that issue is preserved, and I don't think they win even if it is. If they're not asking for a duty to actually go in and undo one's agreement, then I don't think there's anything left to this appeal, because I believe that's the only issue that's left. In terms of the reasonableness of the money, that was hotly disputed. We called Don Frankenfeld. He stretched out the numbers. Exhibit 176 is an example of where we demonstrated that the profits of the company were rising faster than the employee expenses were rising. We hotly disputed whether the compensation was improper, and the jury, in response to 19, 20, and jury instructions 19, 20, and 21, found it was not improper. The only question, and I believe counsel has properly framed this, the only question was whether Instruction 27 had the effect of pulling Don or Lyle Skandrit's compensation arrangement out of the jury's consideration under 19, 20, and 21. One, I don't believe that it did, but more importantly, I believe it's a proper statement of the law. Instruction 27, particularly under the facts of this case, is a proper statement of the law.
But it's not exactly correct if you look at the context and the way it was used in Mueller.
I agree with you, Justice Zinter. I don't think you're ever going to find, I don't believe you could establish, for example, a black letter law that said once a compensation agreement was established, it can never be touched for majority or minority. But I do think in a case like this where the evidence was that the only issue is whether it should be done away with simply so that the minority shareholders can get bigger dividends. The passive shareholders who never worked at Cosmos, who have only rarely come to South Dakota to even look at it. I think the evidence was twice in their lives have anyone but Don or Eloise even come to South Dakota for the purpose of seeing the Cosmos. In the context in which the agreement was given by the Schultzes, reaffirmed by the Schultzes, never questioned by the Schultzes, and where Lyle was made the majority shareholder for the express purpose of protecting that arrangement into the future, Judge Kaczynski was absolutely right. It is not a breach of fiduciary duty not to terminate your own employment agreement. This isn't in the record. It's more of a fallback. This record and this decision is taken on a little bit of context. Lyle Scandrett passed away just about 2 weeks ago. And so in terms of his future with the Cosmos, that has already been established. The question for the court is whether or not Instruction 27 was appropriate at the time it was given in May of 2014. For these reasons, Your Honor, I believe that the judgment of the circuit court should be affirmed. Thank you.
Mr. Hurd, maybe just to tidy things up, why don't you file a suggestion of death?
Oh, certainly will. Thank you, Chief Justice.
And do we have 10 minutes for rebuttal? Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, Chief Justice. First, I think I need to clarify my earlier comment. I simply meant that Mr. Scandrett does not have to fire himself. That's not what we're asking. Reviewing his compensation arrangement and determining whether or not it's adverse to the corporation or in the best interest of the corporation is not the same as saying, I need to fire myself, I'm getting paid too much. That's certainly not what we're advocating here. Mr. Scandrett had a fiduciary duty to the corporation, to his minority shareholders, to make sure that his compensation arrangement was appropriate. That means he needs to disclose the information, he needs to look at the information, and the board of directors or the majority shareholders need to look and decide whether or not this is helpful to the corporation.
But Mr. Hurd just argued that the duty to disclose issue was not preserved.
I don't agree with that, Your Honor. I believe the duty to disclose issue is preserved. We requested an instruction regarding a director's duty of loyalty, and I believe included in that duty of loyalty is the duty to disclose this information. And an important key fact that Mr. Hurd did not advise the court is that in 2009, once the Schultzes discovered the amount of compensation that Mr. Scandrett was paying himself and his daughter, they did request that salary be modified and reviewed, and Scandrett said absolutely not. They wouldn't even second a motion to discuss the issue. At that point, there is absolutely a breach of Mr. Scandrett's fiduciary duty to the corporation and to his minority shareholders. He won't even look at it because a deal is a deal. And when we look at the reasonableness of the compensation arrangement, it's not necessarily just that Mr. Scandrett's being paid too much. It's that they're essentially double-dipping because he's collecting his manager's salary under the deal, but he's also paying his daughter to manage the Cosmos. So there's an additional extra amount of money, a big salary that's being paid out to do the tasks that Mr. Scandrett at one time was doing under this arrangement, and that's why he's collecting this bonus under this arrangement. Also, the tourism has dramatically changed since 1969. That was over 40 years ago. This off-season or the shoulder season is far more busy than it used to be in 1969. It may not be in the corporation's best interest anymore to forego that part of the tourist season. But that's what this compensation arrangement does, and the Scandretts decided they wouldn't even look to decide, is there a way to restructure this? Nobody's saying Mr. Scandrett should have been fired or that Miss Bybee should have been fired or they shouldn't get paid to run the Cosmos. Absolutely they should.
Well, you'd even concede he did a good job. You're just saying he's getting paid too much, right?
That's correct, Your Honor. Nobody's saying they did a bad job. I think they did a tremendously great job, and the facts and the record will absolutely support that.
Well, isn't that what the jury decided?
That
pay was appropriate?
I don't think the jury got to make that decision, Your Honor, because I think that the question of whether a duty existed was taken away from the jury so that whether that duty was breached, they weren't able to reach.
And that's merely by Instruction 27 is what you're relying on?
Absolutely, Your Honor. That instruction took this fiduciary duty claim out of the jury's hand. It effectively said there is no breach of fiduciary duty because you cannot use that concept to apply it to a shareholder's original deal.
But it didn't prevent you from making that argument to the jury.
Of course not. It did not, Your Honor. But the instruction, when you compare it to 18 and 19, and then you listen to the testimony and the argument of the deal, Lyle's deal, it was confusing to the jury. It's misleading. It's flat out not a right statement of law. It's not what Mueller said in the first place. But the Schultzes were not trying to undo their gifted minority shareholder deal, their original deal. And that's what Mueller says, the original deal, not just the deal or a deal. It's the original deal. The Schultz boys, the gifted shareholders' original deal, is not Lyle's compensation arrangement. It had no place in the jury instruction, and it was wrong and confusing for the jury. It's true that Mr. Skanderitz, the sole purpose for this compensation arrangement was to preserve his employment status. But the moment that Mr. Skanderitz received the majority share, all of his eggs in the Cosmo basket hatched. He's in. He's protected. He's not going to be fired. That does not mean that he can pay himself whatever he pleases or that the amount that is paid can never be changed or that the agreement can never be modified. It simply means Mr. Skanderitz is protected, and he was protected. As the majority shareholder, he's not going to be terminated. That's not going to happen. But the amount of compensation that he is taking from the corporation should have been modified and could have been modified under the employment at will concepts. It's important to note that this compensation arrangement doesn't limit any fiduciary duty.
Just for clarification, this isn't really employment at will, is it? Because you couldn't, I mean, at best, it's a seasonal contract because the payment is seasonal. So, I mean, Mr. Hurd said it can be terminated.
That's correct, Your Honor. And when I'm using the term employment at will, that's precisely what I mean.
That's a term of art, but that's not what's going on here.
Well, and nobody's saying that in July, Mr. Skanderitz could have been fired or his compensation arrangement could have been changed. Absolutely not. It's season to season. So at the end of every season, that's when it can be modified. That's when, at the end of 2013, they could have sat down and said, we need to restructure this.
And Mr. Hurd agreed to that. So is that even an issue in this case?
I think it is, Your Honor, because we did not receive the employment at will instructions to tell the jury.
But it's not employment at will.
But to tell the jury that the term of his contract, if there is a term, is season to season. That's pursuant to STCL 60-1-3. If the contract is not in the best interest of the corporation, it can be modified or terminated. We weren't allowed to instruct the jury and argue that to the jury. And that the third instruction is that the corporation has a duty, or the directors and majority shareholders have a duty to terminate that contract if it's not in the best interest. So it is a real issue that the Schultzes were prejudiced because they could not make that argument. That instead, the jury is left with the instruction that the fiduciary duty concept doesn't apply to his compensation arrangement. You can't change the compensation arrangement. You can't undo the compensation arrangement, even at the end of the year or before the next season commences. And because there's no duration on this, it doesn't limit any fiduciary duty that Mr. Skanderitz may owe. And in the Hayes 2 case, this court decided not to answer the question of whether a fiduciary duty can be limited by contract. I don't know that this court needs to answer that question in this case either, because there is no fiduciary duty that's being limited. While Mr. Skanderitz's employment was protected with that majority share, it doesn't mean that he had no duty to ensure his compensation arrangement was appropriate. I think it's also important to point out that while there may be some hard feelings between the families, and the Schultzes certainly are upset over some of the things that have happened, that does not relieve majority shareholders and directors from their fiduciary duty. Even though the Schultzes were not overly involved with the business, and they were certainly happy with the dividend checks they were collecting, that doesn't relieve the fiduciary duty that is still owed in this case. That's the arrangement that they entered into. They are entitled to keep the dividends just as much as the Scandrets are entitled to have the dividends, even though they're not the one actually operating the business. Does it mean that the Scandrets shouldn't get paid? Absolutely not. They still should get paid, but they need to have an arrangement that's going to be beneficial to the corporation and to the minority shareholders as well. Fiduciary duty, majority shareholders and directors do have a fiduciary duty to make sure that their compensation arrangements are in the best interest of the corporation. Instruction number 27 improperly instructed the jury that no such duty existed, which is contrary to South Dakota law, and it was confusing and misleading for the jury. This erroneous instruction was exacerbated by the failure to instruct the jury on employment at will concepts, and the Schultzes were absolutely prejudiced because their fiduciary duty claims were taken away from the jury. The Schultzes request this matter be reversed and remanded for a new trial. I appreciate the opportunity to advocate for my clients, and I appreciate this court's time. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Court will be in recess for 10 minutes.